7.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
You're listening to the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM. My name is Helen Packham and I'm with my co-host Lisa Moore. You can listen to the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM on DAB Radio or wherever you get your podcasts. And this month, we have a kind of a theme running through of care, support, protection, security, that type of thing running through the show. But we've got four fantastic guests that I'm going to be speaking to. The first guests are Kirsty and Debbie from Clear Airways. I'm then going to be speaking to Ben Brown from Ronin Pentest and James Bakaru from Care for Veterans. But first of all, Lisa, how are you?
Hey, Helen, how are you? I'm fine, thank you.
I'm very well, thank you. What's been happening for you since we spoke last month?
Oh, I can't believe that a whole month has gone by since we did the last show. Seems to be a lot of stuff been going on. I've been getting out there doing a lot of networking, actually.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, actually, two of our guests on the show today I've met through networking events, which has been, it's just been really nice to go out and meet different people and talk to people and be sociable and different business owners and understanding their challenges and what's going on. So,
what sort of events have you been attending?
I've done a few with the Brighton Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone back to Toastmasters in Lewes, which is fantastic. Oh, do you know what? It's been so nice to be back on stage. I think I've got that little show off button that's I've pressed that show off button again and been back on the stage.
I hear you on that.
Yeah. And then, BNI is where I met James, who's on the show today. I went to BNI meeting and I did the Brilliant Breakfast, which was a really nice event, actually. That was to do with the Prince's Trust and raising awareness and money for women supporting women. So the Brilliant Breakfast was great fun. Really, really nice event down in Hove. So yeah, how about you, Helen? I know you've been busy.
Yes, I'm still doing lots of leadership coaching, which has been really, really interesting. And I've got a few sort of speaking gigs coming up, sort of mainly like podcast interviews. And I've got, I'm on a summit, which actually kind of in line with the theme. I'm going to be speaking at Susan Dibble's summit. And if anybody knows her in the online world, she's all very much around kind of legal aspects of business. And I don't have anything to do with the legal aspects of business because I'm just all about people telling their stories. But I'm going to be sharing my journey because the summit is all about journeys. So check her out. It's a week-long summit that's coming up in a couple of weeks' time. And I'm moving house.
Moving house, finally. Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, woo. Really good. Yeah. So everything's focused on, clearing out and donating and all that jazz.
Decluttering is one of the best things that you can do, I think. Decluttering for everything. When you're feeling a bit stuck and a bit fed up, get rid of stuff.
Especially when you have a hoarding child.
Ah, yes.
So that's it, really. Yeah, looking forward to kind of Christmas. We've got one show before the end of the year, but should we crack on with this one?
Oh, I think we should. I think we should.
So our first guests are Kirsty and Debbie, and they founded a company called Clear Airways. And I really love the story behind this business. So I'm not going to go into that. I will let you lovely ladies do that yourselves. But welcome to the Brighton Business Show, Kirsty and Debbie.
Thanks for having us.
So I really love to just start off by handing over to you guys because I know the story behind your business. And I think it's for a lot of people, it's going to be really inspiring because since the pandemic, we have interviewed quite a few people that have taken that situation and turned it into something really positive and turned it into something really good for themselves and other people. And if I'm right in saying, I think that you guys are really a great example of that too. So I'm just going to hand over. And if you're okay to just kind of tell us the background of how Clear Airways started.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having us on the show, first
Thank
of all.
You.
Thank you. Well, Kirsty and I were both cabin crew for a major airline. And obviously, when the pandemic hit, we both got made redundant. So we decided to put our skills to use. And Kirsty was already actually training as a first aid instructor alongside part-time with this airline. And then obviously I got made redundant. So I went back to college and trained to become a first aid instructor. And we start up our business, Clear Airways, obviously a nod to our flying days, mm-hmm. And start up our first aid business. And we are going into like schools and nurseries and businesses and training people first aid.
It's absolutely brilliant. And I just want to kind of go back and delve back into the story a little bit, because as cabin crew, you were both cabin crew, and within that role, obviously there is you're in a very high pressured environment, right? And you must have encountered many situations where you had to put those skills to use. Or
absolutely,
yeah. So tell us a bit about that.
Well, I always start the course off to my students by saying, believe it or not, cabin crew don't just serve tea, coffee, chicken and beef. You know, we have a lot more skills, but what we're incredibly good at doing is remaining calm. So although we're walking through the aisles with a smile on our face, behind the curtain, we could be compressing on someone's chest. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, at 40,000 feet, you haven't got 999 to support you. If people have an underlying condition, it escalates when you're stressed, when you're traveling, your blood pressure's low, your sugar levels are low. So we're faced with a lot. But we are highly trained, and we have to train as a cabin crew every 12 months first aid. So we deliver our courses as first aiders ourselves. We're not doctors. We're not surgeons. We are first aiders. So we don't have to get into the physiology and anatomy of anything. We can teach from a first aider's perspective.
And we make it fun, don't we?
Fun but informative. We have lots of stories to share as well.
Well, I'd love to hear some. I don't know if you have any that come to mind in terms of when you were working in the airlines, the sorts of things that you encountered or that you had to deal with.
All sorts of things, obviously spilling tea and coffee, burns, seizures is a massive one as well, because lack of oxygen, stress starts people's seizures off. Kirsty's actually dealt with CPR before, so you're much safer to fly with me than you are with Kirsty. She's had more incidents than me, but you know, any sort of everyday things, really.
Yeah. Choking 2-year-old, panic attacks. We deal with a lot of panic attacks. Now, as a first aider, you don't always have to put a plaster on someone. You don't have to use a bandage. Just being there with someone and supporting them is being a first aider. I mean, the worst thing you could say, though, to someone who's having a panic attack is stop panicking.
Yeah.
But yeah, we deal with a lot.
We do.
Because I think a lot of listeners will really be inspired by hearing the process of what happens. So unfortunately, you were made redundant. Mm-hmm. And I'd imagine that, you know, I know that must have been a very hard thing to go through.
Devastating, because we absolutely loved our job. Yeah. We loved it.
Of course. And so for that to happen, given the circumstances in the world, what was the process for you guys? Because I love hearing this part of people's stories, because it's different how it comes to, you know, it could be a moment where you were together and you kind of just had this pin drop and then this amazing name dropped out of the sky, which is an amazing name, by the way.
Yeah.
Or was it different? How did the idea for this business come about?
Kirsty was already freelancing, working alongside, working with the airline and already teaching first aid part-time. And then because we've been such friends for such a long time, she sort of scooped me up, said, come on, Debbie, put yourself together, use my redundancy money, got the equipment, went back to college and, you know, and here we are now with our lovely little company that's flying high.
And really, why I wanted to start teaching first aid, one, because we use these skills all the time, we know they work. Yeah. And it's really to give people confidence. You know, our mission is to get everyone in the UK first aid trained so that they can pass this knowledge on to future generations. I actually, where I live in Hove, I was actually walking my dog one night about 4 years ago, and I heard some screaming in the park. So I went over, and there was a young boy there who wasn't breathing, a teenage boy, and the paramedics were there, the police were there. And I since found out that he passed away. And the situation was, they were 15 years of age, these teenagers, and they had been drinking alcohol. And one of them had just had too much. And the teenagers were too scared to phone their mum and dad, and they were too scared to phone the police because they were underage drinking and they thought they'd get in trouble. And what they did was let him sleep it off on his back, and they left him for about half an hour. And when they found him, he had choked to death on his vomit. Now, if we were to vomit right now, we have a gag reflux. You don't when you're unconscious and unresponsive. And to be honest, it broke me. I was absolutely devastated. I have a teenage daughter myself. And I just thought that simple maneuver to roll that teenager onto his side would have saved his life. So really, our mission is to get this into schools and teach teenagers and children first aid. Yeah. And we've actually had the privilege of doing that.
Cardinal Newman, we did as well. We had 400 students and they absolutely loved it. Year sevens is now part of the curriculum now to have first aid in with their teaching, isn't it?
It is. That's brilliant. Yeah. That's absolutely fantastic. That's such a huge achievement, Lisa.
It's amazing. Actually, I have a teenage daughter who she left school last year and she's just trained as a lifeguard. And as part of the lifeguard training, she had to do her first aid. And she's absolutely loved it. And she, you know, she comes home and she talks about, oh, you need to do this, mummy, and you need to do that. And this is, if somebody's drowning in the pool, this is what you have to do. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, you get the teenagers.
Yeah.
At that age, it's just a fantastic skill for them to have and to have that confidence to be able to deal with those situations.
Yeah, that's what it's about, is the confidence. Ironically, my daughter, who is 16, was at a party last weekend, the weekend before, Halloween, and she phoned me up at 10 p.m. and said, "Mum, guess what? I've just had to roll someone into the recovery position because they've been drinking," and phoned their mum. So for me, I thought, well, if I've saved one teenager this year, then my job is done.
Oh, gosh. That story is so moving, and I can, you know, really see where that inspiration has come from that experience and the focus on children and young people and how important that is. So tell us more about the workshops and the courses that you offer, because I know that you offer quite a wide range of things, but just give us an idea.
We do. We offer anything from new parents to family first aid at work as well, is hugely important, teaching offices and nursery schools.
Yeah, absolutely. We can sort of tailor each course to suit everyone's individual situation. We have a basic syllabus that we have to comply with, but we will tailor the course to everyone's individual situation. So like Debbie said, new parent courses, they're incredibly rewarding to teach, because if you have a newborn baby,
you're nervous, aren't you?
Yeah, you can. You can read every book going, but until you go home with that baby, it's petrifying. So again, we've designed a 2-hour workshop purely for confidence. Really, our passion is schools. We want to teach every young teenager year seven student first aid, and I'm talking about the UK, not just Brighton and Hove. So we have designed this 55 minute workshop, and honestly, we had these kids eating out the palm of our hand. They loved every minute. In this 55 minute workshop, we teach how to deal with common injuries, how to deal with an unresponsive but breathing casualty, putting someone into the recovery position, CPR, choking, burns and bleeds, and how to use an automated external defibrillator. And each student will get an attendance certificate as well.
Wow, that is
exhausting, rewarding.
Yes.
And there are so many defibs. You see them out on the streets and things. Yes. But I did some training recently, funnily enough, was like taught how to use a defrib. And it's really nice when you've had that training, you feel confident.
Absolutely. Whereas,
you know, when you look at it, you think, I don't know what I would do. How do I do it? And
it's an amazing bit of equipment as well.
Well, actually, ironically, you said that, Lisa, because one of the questions I do ask my students on my course is, who here can use a defib? And people will say, oh, well, I can't, I haven't been trained. But actually, anyone can use a defib because they are bomb-proof. You turn it on and it talks you through everything. Now, on average, just giving someone CPR who has had a cardiac arrest, which is heart-related, on average, there's only about a 5% chance of survival. The point in CPR is to keep the brain alive. What will get them breathing normally is the defibrillator. And if you can get a defibrillator on someone within 3 minutes, what was 5%, the odds jump up to 75% chance of survival. Isn't wow. that incredible? So yes, everyone, anyone can use one, and it's purely for confidence.
Yeah. And it was so nice going through the training, because as you say, it talks you through every single step.
Yes, it does.
You know, put the pad here, do this, press this button. It is simple. It's simple to use.
Most importantly, it won't shock someone who's breathing normally. Even if you try and override it, it won't
shock
someone.
That's what everyone's worried about, aren't they? That as well. It's one of the most common questions.
Yes.
You know, there's so many sort of facets to how this is, you know, really helping people in society, young people with confidence, general confidence levels for dealing with that type of things, saving lives, which is, you know, pretty incredible. But also, I'm really loving your passion. I can hear your passion and how much you love what you do and the mission that you have. So I'm just going to put it out there for anybody listening. You know, you've heard the mission that Clear Airways has about getting into schools. If you are a school listening, then please do get in touch with them. So that they can continue this mission of educating and empowering year sevens in particular, I think you said, across the country. So that kind of leads me on to like, what's next, really? Because it sounds like you've got big plans, ladies.
I think it's not just children. I mean, honestly, our mission in the UK is to get everyone first aid trained purely for confidence. Did you know that 7 in 10 adults lack the knowledge and confidence to act if someone collapsed and was unresponsive but breathing? You know, 7 in 10 is a lot. So it's purely for confidence. And I think as first aiders, what you need to remember is you're not doctors and surgeons. We are just first aiders. You're just what you do with the casualty in between the time that the paramedics arrive really can define their outcome. But yes, it really is for confidence.
Yeah. Can I just bring in James for a second? James, could I bring you in? Because you've just mentioned something there.
I'm really, really engaged with what you're saying. I think it's absolutely fantastic, the work that you're doing. In fact, it was just over a year ago now. My stepfather actually suffered a heart attack while on holiday with my mother and my little brother in Cornwall. Being on the beach, as you say, the time it took to get the defibrillator to him, it was too late, and unfortunately he'd already passed away. Thank you. But as a result, my wife and I sort of did a bit of fundraising and raised enough. And we thought, well, you know, as you're saying, well, let's get a defibrillator, you know, somewhere closer, whether it's on that beach or somewhere else, just wherever it can be used. So we've got this cash that we've raised, just over £2,000, which we thought was enough for a defibrillator. But then we found out that actually you have to pay almost as much for a safe box. To stop it being vandalized, I think.
So
my question was, I've got a pot of cash, and I'd love to use it to get a defibrillator somewhere. So if you can tell me a place that it will be used, I'd happily hand it over.
Yeah, there is. There's that young boy who on Brighton Beach got killed by one punch. Connor, it's a Connor Foundation. It is. He's from Brighton, and that his parents. Raise or their mission is to get 2 defibrillators in every school. So that's a really good place to put the money. And I think they've done like their 100th defibrillator I saw online the other day.
The Connor Foundation.
Yeah. Okay, I'll look into that. That sounds brilliant. Yeah, I mean, you know, let's get it to you straight away. So thank you very much.
Brilliant. Oh, that's what I love about this show. See?
It's so amazing, isn't it? Bringing people together and that connection. Well done, James, for raising that money.
Yeah, that's incredible, James. Brilliant. Oh, I do apologise. I am around my friend's house because there's roadworks outside my house. There's a dog here. Ladies, I know that you have a workshop that's coming up.
It is a workshop. It's on the 3rd of
December.
Yep.
At the Loft at the Little Dippers, which is on Gardner Street in Brighton. So right in the heart of Brighton Lanes. It starts at 10, finishes around about 4:30. And it's an emergency first aid at work course. It's a fully accredited course. So we're certified by the FAA. regulated by Ofqual. The course is normally £85, but we're actually doing a Christmas winter special offer of £45. And that is including the certificate and a first aid manual as well.
That's right. It's valid for 3 years and it's level three.
Level three. You can actually book this on our website, mm-hmm. which is www.clear-airways.co.uk, or you can go onto Eventbrite and book your tickets.
That's brilliant. So for people who are sort of thinking whether this might be suitable for them, what type of people would benefit from attending this workshop?
Anybody, really. Absolutely. Yeah. Anybody, especially in the workplace, fitness instructors.
Mm-hmm. Therapists.
Yeah, absolutely. Yoga instructors.
Yes. Anyone in the office.
People in the office.
Yeah. Anyway, whether you're working with people or you know, serving people.
Helps in the home, you know, at home as well, because that's where most of the incidents come in, because you're not risk assessing all the time. So, you know, it helps at home.
Absolutely.
That's a fantastic thing you're doing there. Really great that you're offering these open courses. So anybody listening to this, get yourself onto that, onto the website, onto Eventbrite, and book a ticket for that. And anything else that you've got coming up in terms of your plans or that people could get in touch with you about?
Well, we are looking to develop a little app, aren't we, Sue, with Clear Airways as well. Yeah. So if anybody's out there can help us set up an app that would sort of give you sort of basic information about first aid, that would be handy as well.
Because obviously with a first aid, companies like to give a handout, a little book, but who carries a book around in their back pocket? No one. So what we want to do is design an app, because everyone has their phone to hand, and we are going to have everything that we're going to teach you and more, all in alphabetical order. So say, for example, asthma. You click on asthma and it will tell you all the signs and symptoms that you need to look out for and how you treat it. And that's something we're looking to do as well.
That's fantastic. Gosh, well, anybody listening that knows anything about that or that can connect Kirsty and Debbie to someone who may be able to help, please do get in touch, because that sounds like a fantastic resource that would be so needed, you know, by everybody. And yeah, brilliant, brilliant stuff. As well as, I'm sure, bespoke workshops and other things, you know, the general courses that you offer. If people want to get in touch, then they can do.
Bespoke, you know, courses going into offices and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
As well. Yeah, so anything.
Tailor all our courses.
Exactly.
Great. And how can we find you on social media?
We are on Instagram.
You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. So our Instagram name, Debbie. Debbie's our social media queen. I'm good at the business part. Debbie is the social media queen. So Debbie, it is.
It's Clear Airways, all one word.
And we're also on Twitter as well, Debbie, aren't we?
Okay. Well, thank you so much. It's so really heartwarming, inspiring. Yeah, really great to hear your story and the mission that you have. And well done for everything that you've achieved.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Radio Reverb.
7.2. Radio Reverb. You're listening to the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM. My name is Helen Packham and I am with my co-host Lisa Moore. You can catch the Brighton Business Show on DAB or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So now we are moving on to our next guest, which is Ben Brown, the founder of Ronin Pentest. Ben, welcome to the Brighton Business Show.
Hi there, Helen. Thanks very much for inviting me on.
It's really, really, really great to have you. And it was really interesting reading about what you do, Ben. And I don't profess to understand completely, but I'm sure that you will be able to explain. So let me introduce you am I correct in saying a cyber security consultant?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yep. So as always, I love to hear the stories behind businesses. So I'd love to hand over to you and hear a little bit about the history and how you got to do what you're doing now.
Having had my sort of spent my 20s doing various weird and wonderful entrepreneurial ventures of different sorts, I realized at the age of about 30, I needed to get a proper job. And so I spent a year in my bedroom training away with two different laptops sitting in front of me, trying to hack something with one and getting stuck and then moving on to the other and moving back. And by the end of it, I studied a couple of exams and managed to get myself onto the graduate training program with a company called NCC Group, who are actually the largest cybersecurity consultancy in the country, possibly even in the world. And so I very much fell on my feet there. And after 6 months of on-the-job training, they released me on the clients, and I spent 5 or 6 years traveling around the UK and Europe, hacking people's websites and networks and mobile apps and whatever else they came up with at the time. And after a while, I realized that having been working for large corporations and government agencies, there was a huge proportion of small and medium-sized businesses who had the need for cybersecurity assistance, but not the budgets to pay the kind of rates that we were being charged out at as consultants. So my solution to that was to, firstly, to leave NCC Group and go out on my own, to try automating as much of the cybersecurity testing process as can be automated in order to drive down the costs and make it accessible to a wider range of people and businesses. So the reason I ended up calling it Ronin is because there's a sort of association between ninjas and hacking. And having left my corporate overlords, I kind of jokingly see myself as a Ronin striking out on my own as a masterless samurai. So that's where the name comes from.
Well, I love that. Just for those that don't understand, and also for myself, so this is like ethical hacking thing, this kind of attacking for defensive purposes.
Exactly.
Just want to kind of like understand a little bit more about what that actually means and what that looks like.
Okay, so the process essentially involves a company deciding that they want to be tested and deciding which parts of their network they want to have tested. And then they get us in, and we come in and basically do all the things that a baddie hacker would do. And then at the end of the process, instead of stealing the money or the data, we give them a report saying these are the things you need to fix so that when the real baddies do come along later on, their life is made much more difficult.
See, it's so interesting to me because it's kind of like this sort of chicken egg situation. It's like having that knowledge of doing that in
very
the first
so.
Place to prevent it from happening.
Exactly that. So defending and attacking is an arms race. The defenders come up with a way of mitigating one particular attack, and then the attackers have to go away and scratch their heads and think about how they're going to get around that. And then, the cycle continues.
It's really interesting because a few months ago, I was alerted to this podcast on BBC Sounds, which is called The Lazarus Heist. I don't know if you've heard about it.
It rings a bell.
It's about the $1 billion heist from the Korean hackers and what happened at Sony and how they brought all the systems down at Sony because of the film that was produced.
That was a high profile one.
Yeah. And they also, there was a $1 billion heist pulled off. And it was absolutely fascinating to hear about hacking culture and farms of hackers. So throughout the world and hotels full of hackers and, you know, how that actually works and how complex it is. And I was just completely blown away by the detail of this thing. And it really made me think just how sophisticated it is.
Yeah, in the last 10 years, everything has changed. It used to be a question of teenagers in their basements attacking companies and defacing their websites or maybe stealing some data. And in the last 10 years, that's changed to where ransomware attacks have become so common that the spotty teenagers have now got millions of dollars behind them. And so the attackers have corporatized themselves in the same way that defenders have. So now, as you say, hotels full of people or even probably office blocks in Moscow, possibly attacking people all over the world constantly.
Yeah, which is crazy. So, you know, it's quite scary, really, isn't it? Which is why... For you, you know, you've saw a niche in terms of helping smaller businesses who still face these types of threats.
Absolutely, proportionally, I think small and medium-sized businesses are actually hit with more attacks than the large ones because there's better odds of success.
So let's have a look at that. Because obviously, as a business owner myself, I really need to kind of brush up on this. So what are we talking about here? When we think about the smaller businesses, what are we talking about?
So it can go from anything from people taking over your website and being able to download your database of customer usernames and passwords, and then possibly encrypting them so that you can't get them. So ransomware started off where they'd get into your network, they'd encrypt all of your data, and then they'd send you a message saying, if you pay us, we'll decrypt it all and you can have it all back. Some people did and some people didn't. Things have now moved on and evolved. And so the attack now looks more like they get into your network, they download all your data so they've got it, then they encrypt it all so they've got it and you haven't. And then they send you a ransom demand saying, pay us the ransom, or not only will we not give you your data back, but we'll also release it on the dark web so everyone else knows that we've got your data. So that compounds the threat.
Wow. Well,
scary. Ben, what is the dark web?
The dark web is a section of the internet which is only accessible if you use a program called Tor, which stands for the Onion Router. And the Onion Router was originally invented by the US Navy as a means of allowing people like journalists and dissidents in dodgy countries to be able to communicate over the internet anonymously. And it has since they since released that code, so it's accessible to anyone. And it's been taken up by a whole host of things, some of which are legitimate, like dissidents and journalists and the like. But it's also become the playground of cyber criminals because of that aspect of anonymity and untraceability. So it's like with almost any cybersecurity tools, they can be used for good and they can be used for bad. And Tor and the dark web are very much a case in point of that.
Okay. Wow, that's so interesting. I've always wondered that, to be honest with you. So thinking back again about me as a business owner, right?
Yep.
So I'd imagine if I've got a database of customer information that's like highly sensitive, that can be, you know, something that could be used as collateral, like for ransom. That's like one example.
Yeah.
What other examples are there of things that can happen, of threats that can happen?
So, for instance, someone might take over your website and change all the images to something unpleasant that they want people to see, either to embarrass you or to scare your customers off. That was back in the early days of hacking. It all used to be about taking over your friend's website and defacing it for just to prove I'm so clever. That again has moved on to have a mischievous corporate use where people can change all the images on your website to something that's embarrassing or causes your business damage, and again blackmail you over it.
Wow, gosh. Anything else? Any other? You've dealt with
it, and it can come down as much as extracting people's personal information in order to then take out loans in their name without them knowing, for example. So if you can get someone's date of birth, mother's maiden name, you know, all the other standard details, if they can build up that much of a portfolio around someone, then they can start taking out loans in your name, damaging your credit rating, contacting your friends, asking them to lend them money.
Wow.
The limits are the bounds of your imagination.
Well, I think most people listening would be like, what do we do now? So what can we do about this? And I know when I was reading through your notes, you can maybe provide some tips.
Sure. So there are things that people as individuals and as businesses can do. And some of them involve spending money and taking action. Some of them just revolve around protecting your data in a responsible way and changing your behaviors without shelling out lots of money. So the primary thing that cybersecurity professionals have been saying ever since the industry sort of came into existence in the early 2000s is use strong, unique passwords for all your accounts, save them in a password manager, and then you only have to remember one password, which is the password for your password manager. And then it's just a matter of copy paste in order to get into all of your other accounts.
Okay. So for those people that don't know what a password manager is, would that be something like LastPass?
Exactly that. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so it's a web-based service that you can log into that stores all your other passwords for all your other websites.
Yes, in heavily encrypted form. So even if that password manager gets compromised, it shouldn't be possible for the attackers to reverse engineer the passwords to actually get the plain text.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask, actually, sorry to interrupt, Helen, but what about your phone saving your passwords for you? Because there's all these tools, isn't there, on your laptops and your phones that would you like us to save the password? Are they safe?
Nothing's 100%. If you want it to be safe, you've got to switch it off in absolute terms. But their LastPass is a prime example where you can have it on your laptop and on your phone. And if you update your password, it'll be synced across both. Mm-hmm. So there's an element of convenience there. But it does mean that the passwords need to be stored in LastPass's cloud. So if LastPass were to be compromised, in theory, it shouldn't be possible to reverse the passwords out, but nothing's 100% in cybersecurity.
Okay, so passwords, I mean, we know about this, but I think, you know, given that we all have so many passwords, it's easy to slip up on this and still use the one that we always want to use. So something like LastPass for that, absolutely. Is there anything else that we can do?
Enable multi-factor authentication, so you have to go into the app on your phone and enter a code after you've entered the username and password. Once you've got strong unique passwords for all your accounts, multi-factor authentication set up on all your accounts, then you're in a much stronger position than you would previously have been in. Mm-hmm. Password managers are free, so there's no cost impact. It's just a question of changing your behavior.
Okay, but if we want to go that step further, I'd like to hear more about, all right, saying a scanner.
So a next step would be to start taking, start using the methods of offensive security to test yourself. So if you've got a home network, for example, just your domestic Wi-Fi network, that will have an IP address, which is exposed to the internet. You want to know if that's leaking any information that could be used by an attacker to potentially get inside your home network and start doing bad things. So you could use our vulnerability scanner to go on the website, create an account, add in the IP address as a target to scan, hit go, and it will test the IP address and see if any information is being leaked, see if there's any vulnerable software in use. And if it is, you'll get a report saying these are the things you need to fix.
Wow. So this is something that you've come up with.
Yes. The idea behind it was that I spent years and years learning to use all of these tools and realized that the learning curve is pretty steep and you can't expect every small business owner to go through that process. So what we did was we took the two main tools that we use professionally and basically set up a website that allows people to use them without spending the years learning to use them. So we took the learning out of the process and simplified it as far as filling in a form on a website, hitting a button, and away you go.
So that's a service that you provide for people that they can purchase from you?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, great. And I'd imagine there are other things that you can do as well. So could you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what you offer, how you work with people?
Sure. So the idea is to automate as much as is possible everything that can be automated. And we've got on our website three different scan types, which when used in combination, come as close as it's possible to get to an automated pen test or penetration test, which is the name of the actual process. So we've got our open source intelligence scan, which you give it the domain name of your company, so example.com as an example, and it will query Google and find out the names of all the people who work in the company, what their roles are, what their email addresses are, and whether those email addresses have been included in a breach recently. What this allows you to do is essentially to know if we're able to find out the names of these people, then attackers are also able to find out their names. And so it's worth giving those members of staff additional training against phishing attacks. If they've been included in any breaches, it's worth having them change their passwords and enable multi-factor authentication. Then additional features of the scan are, it will enumerate subdomains of your domain, which might give more different IP addresses that attackers would be able to use. So for example, if you've got your main website is on example.com, but then you've got a development example on development.example.com. That might have less protection on it than the main website. So an attacker's immediately going to go for that one rather than the main one because it's less well defended.
Right. Okay.
The software in use might not be up to date, for example. There might be vulnerabilities they can take advantage of.
I mean, this is really fascinating, and gosh, it can go into depths, can't it? I imagine this is so much to this.
There's a lot you can do with it.
But I guess, you know, personally, me as a small business owner, I'm thinking, right, well, I really want to like have a think about this because, you know, I've got all of these different websites and I've got these vulnerabilities potentially. So if someone out there is listening like me, which they most likely are, how can they get in touch with you, Ben? How can they engage with you to find out more about working with you?
Well, you can contact me on LinkedIn. My profile name is Ronin-Pentest, or you can go to the website and there's a contact us form where if you fill that in, I'll get an email and I'll get straight back to you. So get in touch and I'll reach out and talk you through the options and see what we can do.
Brilliant. And you're on Instagram as well, aren't you?
Yep. Instagram, yeah. Again, Ronin-Pentest, yeah. Twitter, Facebook, you name it, I'm there.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Brighton Business Show and sharing this really, really, firstly, you know, really inspiring what you're doing and where that's come from, but also how you're helping people with this kind of attack for defense approach, which is so, so interesting. So thank you so much for your time today, Ben.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Radio Reverb. Shush now, I'm doing a trailer. For the Folkhampton Radio Show, it's every Thursday from 5 p.m. here on Radio Reverb. My name is Chris Thorpe Tracy, and I will play you an hour of folk, trad, psych, great songwriters. There's usually geese too, but don't worry about them. Let me give your ears a treat. Ooh, that sounds a bit weird. So that's Folkhampton, Thursdays, 5 p.m. on the mighty Radio Reverb 97.2. Okay, you can honk now.
You're listening to the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. My name's Helen Packham and I'm with my co-host Lisa Moore. You can listen to the Brighton Business Show on DAB Radio or wherever you get your podcasts. And now we move on to the final guest of the show, and it is James Bakaru from Care for Veterans.
Hello. Hi. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the show, James. And see, the organization that you are working for, representing, it's a very special day today on the recording of the Brighton Business Show because it is Remembrance Day today.
It is. Yeah. We've just had a really, really lovely remembrance service downstairs with all of our residents. We had a lovely display a remembrance wall of those past and present, and it was a really nice opportunity for us all to come together and to remember our nation's heroes. Mm. Aside from that, I'm so glad to be sat down because this morning I don't know how I get myself in these situations, but we were running a race for remembrance this month, and the idea is that people sign up to run 11K for Remembrance Day. I know, I thought that worked quite well too, Helen. 11K for Remembrance Day. And the idea was people go out virtually in their own time, wherever they like, and run 11K to remember, a loved one or just to celebrate Remembrance Day. And I got up at 6:30 to go down to Brighton Beach and do a run with four or five people at local businesses. that signed up and took part. And one chap turned up with a giant sumo suit, which weighed 20 kilos. So he started running, and he got so tired after 2 miles, he asked if I would wear it. So I hate running. I don't run. I don't enjoy it. I can't think of anything worse. I don't know why I even agreed to do it, but I think I agreed to it because I can't put on an event, not take part in it. And now I've had to run to blinking Ovingdean and back in a fat suit, which weighed 20 kilos. So my right leg is absolutely pounded. And quite frankly, I've already seen our in-house physiotherapy team to ask if there's anything they can do.
Oh, wow. And sorry, did I? Has this all happened today?
It all happened this morning. Yeah.
Wow, you have achieved so much already, James.
Suffice to say, I will never run again. To this day, mark my words, you will never see me run again.
Oh, never say never. Just maybe not in a sumo suit, hey?
Not in a sumo suit.
But that's incredible, and what a great thing to be doing on this day. So, James, I understand that you are head of fundraising and marketing for Care for Veterans. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah? So, for anybody that doesn't know, and again, I was so inspired when I was reading the information about what you do, please tell us a bit of the history about Care for Veterans, and obviously we know where it's come from, but more of the context around that and what you actually do.
Yeah, of course. So Care for Veterans, we're a charity based in Worthing in West Sussex, and we support veterans and their families from across the country. We support physically disabled ex-service personnel from the past, present and future, providing residential nursing care. We have rehabilitation facilities, respite, but also end-of-life care as well to any physically disabled ex-service personnel, but also their families. And that's all from our centre here in Worthing. We're actually just celebrated 102 years of existence recently. We actually rebranded in 2017. We used to be called the Queen Alexandra Hospital Home. However, in 2017, we found that a lot of people thought we were a hospital. Rightly so. You know, it says we're a hospital. So I think there was a bit of confusion there about what we did. So we rebranded in 2017, became Care for Veterans. I think it's pretty self-explanatory now what we do, I hope. yes, we were established in 1919 to care for those soldiers initially or originally, returning from World War One with life-changing disabilities. And for over 102 years now, we've provided long-term nursing care, rehab and respite, and recently a gold standard award-winning end-of-life care as well to, as I say, ex-service personnel. So that means personnel from the RAF, the Army, the Royal Navy, and auxiliary services as well. And what we do here with Care for Veterans is we actually adopt a multidisciplinary approach to towards the care and rehabilitation of our residents. So that includes all under one roof, you know, the physiotherapy. We have occupational therapists, speech and language therapists. We offer neuropsychology as well as social and recreational activities, you know, to keep people active, and also a chaplaincy service as well. And that's, as I say, all delivered here in Worthing. So when you're here, the idea is, you know, you hopefully have pretty much everything you need rather than, you know, perhaps having to sort of dart around to all sorts of appointments here, there and everywhere. So we love what we see every day here. And the idea is although we do have we do offer residency, here, residential nursing care, for the majority of those that visit us, our end game is to try and boot them out as quickly as possible, because, you know, we do really want people to remain, you know, independent, and you know, the best case for us is that those that come in, you know, leave to you know, lead full and independent lives.
That's just incredible. And I'm thinking about, you know, 102 years filmed after the year, you know, the year after,
and we've still got the same CEO. No, I'm just kidding. We don't.
It's just, you know, it really thinks, you know, how would you say that, you know, it's always, so has it always been a charity?
It has. Yeah. Yes. It's always been a charity. We as I say, we initially were set up a long time ago to support those come back from World War One. However, you know, it's worth mentioning, you know, I think there is sometimes a bit of a misunderstanding about what a veteran is. And I think, you know, no one would be, you wouldn't be blamed for thinking it's probably an older person, but actually it's not. You know, we support all veterans and their families. I mean, we've got a young chap at the moment, Steve. Steve's 39 years old, and he was a warrant officer, for example, and he was born in Southampton in 75, I think from a young age he always wanted to follow his father's footsteps and become a soldier and join the Royal Engineers at 17 years old. And he was posted abroad in Kosovo as part of the peacekeeping force. And as a Royal Engineer, he specialised in water and fuel supplies and completed tours in Afghanistan and Kabul and Cambodian and Sierra Leone and amongst others. But in his spare time, he's a bit of an action man, you know, 39 action man. He became a joint service mountain expedition leader, loved canoeing, mountain biking, you know, motorbiking as well, loved his Hondas. But whilst driving back from the garage one afternoon, life changed for Steve, and a car knocked him off his bike, sent him headfirst into a van. And unfortunately, although the air ambulance tried to perform operations at the roadside to relieve pressure from his brain, he did suffer quite severe brain injuries, which have affected his speech and paralysed one side of his body, which left him unable to walk. And he's now using a wheelchair. And I think, you know, it's not always about being injured on service. It's not that you're, you know, a World War II veteran. It's actually, you know, we have, you know, people coming in with all sorts of incidents. So even if you served a day or your loved one has, you have an accident like that, you know, you're going to need support, and we're here to try and help with everything you need.
Mm.
Radio Reverb. 97.2.
Radio Reverb. So a veteran, if you could just explain the definition of what a veteran means, then it's.
Yeah, so a veteran is someone who served at least, just a day in service. So you could have signed up one day and left the next. Oh, no, this isn't for me. But as long as you've served a day's service, you'd be classed as a veteran. You've been in the army in some degree.
And when you say past, present and future, What does that mean? What do you mean in that sense of future?
So I guess what we mean is you know, looking forward, making sure that we have you know, the support and infrastructure needed for the numbers of personnel that potentially might need our service. So just making sure really that we our strategy and how we deliver our care is secure and ultimately going to be here for another 102 years to make sure that we are. Embedded within the community as a consistent service, not one that could potentially, not one that might have an end date. we hope.
Yeah, and in your role, within the sort of head of fundraising and marketing role, what sort of things are you doing within that role to get reached, interest, engagement into care for veterans? What does that look like?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, one of the really interesting parts of my role and the work that my team does is engaging with local businesses and actually, I think one thing that we've tried to do is dispel. I think perhaps there is sometimes this. Perhaps some businesses might feel like, you know, a partnership with a charity can be quite time consuming. And when you're a small business and you haven't got many staff and you're working so many hours, you think, gosh, you know, working with a charity, it's you're just giving to the charity. Whereas actually one thing we really want to do or try and help businesses understand is that we're actually here to support you. Yes, it's great. We need you to come. It'd be great if you can volunteer a couple of hours, take part in a run or sign up to our lottery, whatever it may be. But actually, we can help you. You know, we've been here for a long time. We've got some incredible supporters. And over the years, they've been very loyal. And as a result, those that support Care for Veterans, they're really happy to support in turn. And actually, we can help small businesses grow their social media. We can help you promote your business. You know, we can help you with some brand awareness. It's really not all about us as a charity. It's actually really about working together and trying to help each other. And I think the last 18 months have really highlighted the real need for us to do that. And I think small businesses have suffered, charities have suffered. And I think, you know, if we can work together and sit down and figure out what do you want to achieve over the next year, what are we trying to achieve and how can we do it together? You know, we can share resource and we can share our strengths and lean on one another. And I think, you know, we've been blown away by some of the amazing support we've had from local businesses. But likewise, I think they've been quite taken aback by how much we've been able to support them as well and how much they've got from it. And without this huge time investment or you know, strain on their resource. And so so I guess, yeah, that the more if there's anyone out there that would like to, you know, talk about how you know, perhaps a partnership might work with the charity and just have a cup of tea, you know, give us a ring. You know, as a team, we're really, really keen to get back out into the community, meet up with those local businesses, find out what we can do together to support one another.
I really love that. You know, I'm hearing more and more. I think it's about this sort of getting out of this sort of outdated view of how businesses work with each other now. And that actually it's a real collaborative approach. And I've noticed that with loads of other businesses that I've spoken to who are working in partnership. You wouldn't necessarily think how can they be mutually beneficial to each other, particularly with a charity set up.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, you say you've been going 102 years. You know what you're doing, right? You got some business now going on there. So there can be real reciprocal benefit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think one thing, you know, outside of that we're keen to do is one thing we've always struggled with. I mean, you'd be surprised how many people don't know we exist locally. I mean, I just walked down the road from here and we're on Boundary Road in Worthing, which is near a high street. And I went around last week and sort of went down to the high street, knocked on some of the local businesses' doors, just handed them a flyer about an event we've got coming up. I said, I didn't know you were down there. I said, you're an estate agent. I said, how did you? We are a block away. I said, I wondered what that building was. I said, I am 2 minutes away. If the estate agents don't know that I'm here.
Well,
so clearly, you know, there's a bit of work we've got to do with just making sure people know we're here. We've got an open door policy. Obviously, things have been a bit different recently, but we're really keen to get people into the building and see what we do. So we often have tours. There's, you know, just to come in and meet some of the residents, have a chat, have a look at have a look at some of the services going on, and you know, just find out a bit more and whether, you know, you want to come join us at an event or you've got any questions or it's about a loved one or relative you're thinking about that needs support, then, you know, I think it's just great. Just come and visit us. We're desperate to see you.
so people can physically come and see you. If they want to maybe check out online, how can people get in touch?
Yeah, so I mean, the best thing to do is to go to, you can always give me a call directly on 01903 218444. You can go to our website, careforveterans.org.uk. However, we are active, or we're getting far more active on social media. So we're at Care for Veterans UK on Facebook. We're Care for Veterans on Twitter at Care for Veterans, and on Instagram, Care for Veterans. So you can catch us on any of those. And drop me a message and we'll get a good time to just meet up and have a cup of tea.
Wow, that's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, James. Again, whenever I do these shows, I always feel a little bit moved, inspired. It kind of taps in. It feels good. It feels great that, you know, all of these amazing things are happening and people are doing great things and we can help to share and spread the word. So thank you so much for coming on today's show.
Thank you.
Actually, Helen, I'm going to ask you, you're going to come to the carol service at Lancing College, which Care for Veterans are putting on in December.
I would love to.
Definitely going to go. I think we should go. I think it will be a fantastic event.
Give me the date. I'm there.
Is this a good opportunity for me to plug two events?
Go for it. We've got a little bit to go.
So yes, we have got a couple of events coming up. So we've got a Christmas market on the 27th of November, Worthing Christmas Market. It's at our grounds at Care for Veterans on Boundary Road in Worthing from 12 till 6. We'll have the Royal British Legion Brass Bands, Carol Singers, Santa's Grotto, 25 local artisan small businesses coming to display on some beautiful market stalls, a beer tent, food court, games, candy floss, coconut shies, and so much more. So please come and visit us between 12 and 6 on the 27th. Outside of that, we also have a very prestigious carol service which we put on between 2 and 3 at Lancing College Chapel. It's from 2 till 3, and you can buy tickets online at careforveterans.org.uk underneath events. It's £10 a ticket. They're going fast, and it's a wonderful way to get involved in the Christmas spirit.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, James. I'm definitely looking forward to getting to a ticket. You're listening to the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM. This has been the November show with Helen Packham and my co-host Lisa Moore. Thanks so much, Lisa. That was a good one, wasn't it?
Really good. Really good.
And we'll look forward to coming back next month.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.